Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Emily, and I'll be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequests of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute also offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $300,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The title of today's forum is U.S.-Croatian Relations. Today's guest is His Excellency Joško Paro, Ambassador to the U.S. for the Republic of Croatia. Ambassador Paro comes from the position of the President's Foreign Policy Advisor, where he has served since February 2010. He joined the Croatian Foreign Service in January 1992, where he worked on bilateral relations with Western European countries. From 1993 to 1996, he served as Deputy Chief of Mission at the Croatian Embassy in Madrid. In 1996, he was head of the Political Analysis Department and the Foreign Minister's Speechwriter. From 1997 to 2002, as Assistant Minister of Foreign Affairs, he was responsible for relations with neighboring and European countries, the U.S., Russia, Canada, and Israel. And an experienced negotiator, he played a prominent role in post-conflict normalization of relations with neighboring countries. In 2003, he was appointed ambassador to the United Kingdom, a position which he held until 2009 when he was transferred to The Hague, where he served as Croatian ambassador in the Kingdom of the Netherlands and Croatian permanent representative at OPCW. He is married to Janša Paro, a journalist for HTV, and is a father of two children. Please join me in welcoming Ambassador Paro.
Well, thank you very much for having me here. Well, and my special thanks to the LDS Church, which is my host. I have a program, non-stop program for 2 days. Well, and I'm sure that I will go back enlightened by the knowledges about Utah. I would like first, before I start, to place a little bit Croatia on your mental map. So geographically, as you know, geography is still very important when it comes to what a country is and what the country is not, what the country can become. So Croatia is a typical country of the fringes. So, well, it's a fringe country. It's a country that is neither nor, that it's a country that is either or. So we are the country on the crossroads of cultures, on the crossroads of political influences in the last 700 years. So, well, that is, we are there where the tectonic plates of powers, both spiritual and worldly powers in Europe, were pushing each other's back and forth. So that explains a lot. I would like to bring a parallel to Ukraine. So Ukraine means literally, in translation from the Russian language, it means a fringe country, or the country at the verge. So if you look the map of Croatia, then you will see that Croatia has a really very, very unusual shape for any country. It looks like a croissant. It is a curve. And this is exactly how far the Turkish Ottomans have managed to penetrate into Europe. So, and all around that wedge is Croatia. Along the border with the Turkish Ottoman Empire, the area was called Krajina. And it was under the direct rule of Vienna. So you have Ukraine, which is Ukraina, and then you have here, well, Kraina. This is the fringe area. So now, Croatia has joined NATO and the European Union, and our nature of being a country neither nor either or has literally disappeared. We are now where we are. We are part of the Western community of liberal democracies and market economies. So, but in the history, I'm talking just about the modern history, say from 1948 to 1990s. So we were constantly in some kind of shifting worlds. So we were a communist, part of the communist Yugoslavia, but still that was not, I would say, a genuine communism. That was a communism that had many facets of the market economy, for example. That was a famous Yugoslav self-management system. We, unlike the misfortunate neighbors, and like Romania, Hungary, Bulgaria, Albania, so we were free to travel. We were all having passport, going around. Well, our country was open to the foreigners with no restrictions at all. So Yugoslavia was a great tourist destination for people all over the world. But still, it was a communist country. That was one-party system. There was a dictatorship. They like to talk about it themselves as a communism with a human face. So depends who you were. If you were critical about the regime, so they would show the face that was not human to you. If you were just meek and obedient, well, you had a pretty good life. So again, well, Croatia was part of Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was created by the great powers for the simple reasons because after the end of the First World War, well, the powers of that time, which means winners at that point, and that is France, Britain, and the United States, were of the opinion that it would have been very complicated to have countries emerging in the area of the fringe land based on the self-determination principle that has created countries like three Baltic republics, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Hungary, and so on, Serbia. So they said, well, they are complicated, and we are going to lump them together into one state. And they have created an extremely complex state that of Yugoslavia, Kingdom of Yugoslavia, later on Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, that was possible to keep together due to the internal differences only by the power of dictatorship. That was first a military dictatorship between the two world wars and later on, well, a communist dictatorship. As soon as Europe has shed the shackles of dictatorship, Soviet dictatorship, Yugoslavia was the last of the communist countries to embark on the path of freedom. Last one. Because complacency was one reason. So we were well off. I mean, all former communist countries of Europe were well behind economically from what Yugoslavia was. But still, there was a problem. How to introduce democracy in a country that is run by one party in full control of the repressive apparatus? So if you have free and fair elections, multi-party system, who is going to give orders to the army and the police apparatus? Well, they were formed as a communist party. Yugoslav People's Army was actually an armed communist party. And now all of a sudden, well, in the republics of Slovenia and Croatia, you have free and fair elections and multi-party government, and the communist party was defeated. What now? The only way for them to continue was to bring the army on the street and to fight the new democratic government. Then we had a war. So we had a war, and we have had disintegration at the moment when the core Europe is integrating. So you have a strong swing of integration in Europe at the very, very moment when Yugoslavia is falling apart. Most interesting, well, at that point, well, I would say 90% of all governments in the European Community member states were socialist governments. Socialists in power. They were all crazy about Yugoslavia. That was the country of their beautiful youth. That was the country of their volunteer work for the socialist youth of Yugoslavia. And they did not understand at all, well, what's going on? Why does Slovenes and the Croats, well, want to secede from Yugoslavia? Why they are disintegrating while we are all integrating? That was the year prior to the Maastricht Treaty. Europe was discussing about deepening the integration processes. So, on the other hand, well, they had no historic perspective. They did not understand the situation on the ground, and unfortunately, it took quite a while for the United States of America to intervene once more in the 20th century into Europe's affairs, because the European community at the time was absolutely not equipped in hardware terms to deal with such a deep crisis as it was the Yugoslav crisis that turned into a very, very nasty armed conflict. So they did a number of cosmetic interventions that have made the things worse. But it was only when the United States finally realized that the crisis in Yugoslavia is challenging the fundaments or value fundaments of our political culture, and when they realized that this is going to endanger actually Europe, United States intervened, and in a way to support goods against the bad, and to intervene militarily against the main perpetrators of instability, and ended the war in 1995. So, at the moment when the United States intervened, Croatia was having one third of its territory out of control. So there was a political push that the Croatian government has used to actually, first of all, to prepare itself for the military solution of the occupation situation. And in very swift 3 days, long operation, the Croatian government has managed to actually sweep out the rebels and establish a full control. Next step was actually changing the balance, military balance in Bosnia-Herzegovina, which the United States have used to intervene, first militarily and then diplomatically. That has led to the end of conflicts in the Western Balkans, at least for some time. Well, that was a moment, 1995, that Croatia has embarked on the peace peaceful track of its modern development. So, still, it took another actually from 1995 to 2013, another 18 years for Croatia to become fully integrated into the Western political, economic, and security structures. So the reason for that was that our transition, as you might have already concluded, was threefold transition, actually, unlike the transition of, for example, Poland and Czech Republic, which was a transition from the communist one-party system and planned economy to the multi-party system and market economy. In Croatia, well, the transition was first transition from communism to multi-party liberal democracy and market economy. Then it was a transition from war to peace, and it was a transition eventually from being in hostility towards being reconciled with your neighbors, but with yourself too, because you cannot ever reconcile with your neighbor if you do not reconcile with yourself. So that was these three layers of transition have made our accession to the European Union and NATO so long. So, well, talking in more precise terms about the accession to the European Union, our accession was exceptional in many ways. First of all, well, it was an accession. It was the first ever accession of a country that has started its existence from the war. So it has never happened before. Then, well, Croatia's accession was accession of a solitary candidate. So all other enlargements of the European Union have happened in. So to say, in batches. Well, the countries would join the European Union together. So you had Finland, Austria, whoever was then, well, all the countries of former Soviet Union coming together. And then, well, there was Croatia, well, with no one to follow, no one to rely on, except on our own forces. Interesting and different circumstance for our accession was that there was no willingness by the population of the European Union to accept new members when we started. So there was we suffered from the so-called enlargement fatigue in the European Union. Also, while our accession was happening on the against the backdrop of two big crises in Europe. One was the financial crisis, and the other was the institutional crisis, or if you like, absorption crisis. Well, after the big bang, which saw so many countries joining the European Union, well. The core European Union countries and governments, they have asked themselves, can we afford more? Can we continue forward in accepting new countries without adjusting ourselves from within by introducing new rules or procedure? It has become too crowded. 27 member states around the table, each of them having the veto on common foreign and security issues. Very complicated. Are we going to get another one? The answer was yes, we are going to get another one, but they should better be perfect. And a new set of rules for the accession has been established to get Croatia as a member state, which included all kind of safety clauses that were not existent before. Well, when former Eastern European countries were joining the European Union, so what really mattered was to adopt the legislation that would harmonize the national legislation of the candidate countries with the existing, a legal inheritance existing in Europe. So in Croatia's case, they said, well, that is not enough. Especially, we don't want to have another case of Romania and Bulgaria who have adopted all the laws needed, but have not created mechanism for the implementation of those. So this is not going to happen. And then, well, they have invented something very new in the process, and that was opening and closing benchmarks, opening and closing a lot of chapters. Well, the legal inheritance of the European Union is divided on 35 chapters. Well, covering areas from foreign policy through phytosanitary control or phytosanitary standards or competition, free movement of goods and people, so transportation. So without getting into details, this is all available on the European Commission's website. So what they said, well, not only that you should first prove, get or present the proof that you are ready to discuss this, that they have said, well, for each of the chapters, opening benchmarks. This is what you have to do in order to make yourself capable of discussing it with the member states and the European Commission. And then when you would present them with the proof that you are capable of discussing and understanding, you would discuss it. But when you would finish all the discussion, adopted all the laws, they would ask you to present evidence that you have prepared your institutions for the full implementation of what you have adopted. So altogether, well, they have been 400 opening and closing benchmarks along the long way of 13 years of our accession. So having said that, well, we have joined the European Union almost perfect, if there is such a thing as a perfect member state, because you can see that some of the old member states are backpedaling from their own obligations, even with almost perfect structures to which we were adopting ourselves. So we have been successful, but what were the biggest challenges along the way? Those that have to do actually with the legacy of conflict and war. Those were the hardest nuts to crack. Well, of course, I think that what presents still the biggest challenge is to develop an economy that is going to be successfully competitive with the competition in the European Union. That is still a challenge. Although formally, the European Commission has imposed formal preconditions and conditions for enabling Croatia to participate successfully in the competitive framework of the European market. But nevertheless, that still remains a challenge for us. So, competition was the biggest challenge, I think, other than the challenges of reconciliation with the neighbors. That was actually the most challenging thing, which required, first of all, as I said, internal reconciliation. So you cannot. Well, we were never formally in war with Serbia, but it is quite clear that Serbia has organized aggression on Croatia, financed aggression on Croatia, and it was very difficult to change the mindset from within, to make people accept that you should become friend with your former enemy. And as you know, when you have a bad neighbor, as a person, you have two choices. One is to pick up your things and move to another neighborhood. That is the easy way. The other one is to try to engage your neighbor to become better than it has been so far. Well, for the countries, there is no luxury of moving away. So you have to stay there. And actually, you have no choice other than building a big fence or engage with your neighbor in making your neighbor better. So, but if you want to engage with your neighbor to become better, so first you should better yourself. So, and that is a big challenge in democracy, because you have organized political parties which are against that, and they would do everything to prevent you. They would do everything to make you, force you as a government to build a big fence rather than extending your hand to your neighbor and trying to make it better. So that was a big challenge for the Croatian governments, because, I mean, even those governments that were not so very keen to extend the friendly hand, or which were, I mean, government controlled by more nationalistic parties, they were under the pressure of the European Union to do so. And they would, in order to get what the people expected, and that is to become member of the European Union, to become member of NATO, they would eventually backpedal on their nationalism, and they would eventually extend the hand, friendly hand, to the former enemies, both at home and in abroad. That is one of the most important beneficial influences of the European Union. Because, what do you say? You are a fervent nationalist. You are still wounded from those terrible days of war. Then you have a visit by joint committee, Franco-German committee, visiting you at your parliament, and telling the history of the Franco-German relationship, which is probably the worst in the history of Europe. And now, they live in perfect harmony. They might not love each other dearly, but they have put their money in equal parts, German money to France and French money to Germany. So you eventually start loving your money in Germany as you love your German, so, and vice versa. This is about European Union. European Union is a community, and for us it was critically important to become part of the community, and for us it is critically important to make our neighbors part of the same community. So nowadays, Croatia is Croatian diplomacy is very much engaged, and this is actually the most important area of our diplomatic engagement in bringing our neighbors to the European Union. This is for us the most important strategic goal now that we have achieved what we wanted, and that is to many people in Croatia would say we have not joined the European Union, we have returned to the European Union, because, they always felt we belong there, we do not belong to the area of Netherlands. But now we cannot conform ourselves to become again, a Krajina, a country on the fringe, a fringe land. We cannot afford that. We have to push the boundaries of the European Union further on. Actually, if you look at the map, the whole area of the Balkans, where you have non-EU member states like Serbia, Macedonia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Albania, they're all surrounded by the NATO members and the European Union members. So when we talk about the enlargement of the European Union onto the Western Balkans, this is actually technically a wrong term. It is not about the enlargement, it is about a consolidation. Because we are just going to fill the gap, the white spot that still exists in Europe. And those white spots are really in bad need of joining the community of democracies and the community of values. I like to talk about values because this is what people really understand, that this is what moves the people to change their habits. We have been members of the European Union formally from July 2013, but we have spent a whole year before as so-called virtual members of the European Union, where we were participating in everything the European Union was doing without having the right to vote. That was the difference. So we have now experience of 1.5 years, roughly, of the EU membership. Is it beneficial? Was it to what the people expected? So, no. If the people were expected that when we join European Union, this is going to be a big party, which is going to fill our pockets with a lot of money, and we'll enjoy. So, well, in that terms, well, not. But I would say that 13 years of journey were more important than the very arrival, because we have seen an amazing transformation of the society, of the economy, I would say of the mindset too, in 13 years. So it could be a long period when you think in terms of a single human life. So most of you were toddlers when we started it, so, and now you're grown-up people. It was really accession is not something that it's not a process of governments accession to the governments of the European Union. It is the accession of this whole society, and the changes that we in a way we're forced to undertake were extremely beneficial. One of all, I think, is the most important, and that is the understanding that the people have gained about the rule of law and the importance that your democracy is based on the rule of law and not vice versa. That the rule of law is based on the voluntarism of democracy. So this is very important. The European Union is pretty well-organized society, and joining that society, that, as I said, set of values underlying the legal system, that was extremely important. From the historic perspective, I would say that reconciliation was the single most important thing. Reconciliation and adopting the culture of compromise. Well, when you have experience of 80-something years of dictatorship that challenge you as a person, challenge your very existence, so you do not learn much about the value of compromise or meeting halfway. So what this period of 13 years of accession has taught us, especially the political classes, is the value of compromise. You learn, European Union is a culture of compromise. When you have 28 member states with 28 differences of interest sitting and trying to find a common ground, that is a great thing. So you, Of course, well, from the perspective of the United States as a state, that looks sometimes really very weak and probably gets to nerves of Washington. Well, how slow is the European Union? How difficult it is to take the right decisions? But on the other hand, I admit that is a bit of nuisance. But on the other hand, that makes the decision implementable if it is. If the decision has been made upon the convergence of different interests, so it is implementable. Also, I haven't said much about the U.S.-Croatian relationship. I will say one thing that probably would not resonate very nicely in Brussels. But I have to say that along those 25 years of transition since the establishment of a modern Croatian state up to now, the United States have been the most important European ally of Croatia. It wasn't Germany, it wasn't Britain, it wasn't Italy or our neighbors, it was the United States of America. So at the most critical points of our modern existence, we have never counted on any other state in so critically as we did on the United States. Even in the last periods of our accession negotiations, the American assistance, especially with some of the incredible member states of the European Union, was crucial. Was absolutely crucial. Well, I would just mention a couple of points where the United States played a very important role. First, the role in the liberation of the country and establishing actually full control over our territories. There, the United States has played the crucial role, both in terms of helping us militarily, helping us in terms of intelligence, and eventually setting up the peace process which has brought peace to the whole region. Secondly, in our ambition to join the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, again, the United States were the single most important partner in building up new defense system, new defense philosophy, just name it. So when the process of accession to the European Union started, I don't think that there was a single European country that has put so much money and effort in helping us to bring about our system to the level that was enabling us to embark successfully on the negotiations. In the last leg of our accession talks, we had still a problem of legacy and the reconciliation issues with our neighbors. Again, who was there to help with the neighbors and to help with the EU member states to understand what is going on in Croatia, what Croatia can do? Again, the United States of America. So, as I said, the most important European ally is not a European country. So it was the United States. And, the modern-day relationship with the United States is reflecting, obviously, the partnership that we have developed in the last 25 years. So Croatia is today a strong Atlanticist, one of the staunchest Atlanticists among non-Atlantic countries. So, because, as you know, we are a Mediterranean country, not very Atlantic. But as ambassador, I really enjoy the fruits of that that very fruitful relationship. So, well, we are together, well, partners, say, in every bigger international crisis where NATO is engaged, from Afghanistan to the waters of Somalia. So, and we are together, brothers in arms. Today, my job is mainly related to increasing the trade and business relationship with the United States on scientific cooperation, education cooperation. This is the area. Well, I'm now completely a peacetime ambassador, which is not as challenging and interesting as it used to be, but it's more fruitful. So, I think I have more or less covered all what I wanted to say, and I'm very happy to respond to your interest. If you have questions, I'm happy to reply.
Thank you for coming today, Your Excellency. My name is Josh Greep. I'm a pre-social psych major, so I'm very interested in these multinational relationships. You talked about some of the sufferings, some of the sacrifices Croatia's had to go through in getting to this point. What are some of the benefits? I know you caricatured the, we're not going to have our pockets full of euros, it's not a party. What specific things, if I was a Croatian, would I be able to expect and hope for being a part of the European Union?
Yeah. Well, sacrifices. I don't think that we have sacrificed much. So, well, in conceptual terms, well, the biggest challenge was to explain to people who have only 10 years ago, ready to give their lives, and we're giving their lives for the independence. To convince them, why should they now relinquish the independence? Because, well, when you join the European Union, you are basically transferring so much of your sovereign powers to the multinational forum. So, as our president explained to the nation in the occasion of signing the European Treaty, he said, well, we have not given away our sovereignty. We have just transferred our sovereignty to the joint bodies of the European Union. So it sounds like a trick, but it's not. Well, it doesn't make much sense to keep your economy, for example, your science, your culture closed in the national boundaries. It doesn't make much sense. Well, in a globalized world, you should go out. It is outside where you make your national interests flourish. And this is what we did. This is what we did with our defense, our army. I mean, we have now as a NATO members, we are specialized in some areas where we can contribute to the alliance. And we have only 25,000 professional soldiers altogether. So had we maintained the territorial system of the army, typical for a national state, probably 150 people would be needed, and that comes to an enormous cost. So today, Croatia has, I think, four jets. Well, we don't need more than four because we have thousands that belong to other NATO member states. So there is Article 5, according to which, well, If our territory is in jeopardy, all member states are obliged to defend us. So, similarly, when it comes to the free market and actually common market, Croatian economy is not an economy of 5 million people. It is an economy of 500 million people. So there is a freedom of movement of people, goods, ideas, if you like. So our students, Croatian students, are free to go and study in whichever member of the European Union. And by the way, well, paying this or not paying anything, paying what, for example, Swedes pay in Sweden, and I think they don't pay anything, or what the British are paying in Britain, which is some £6,000. But you are free to travel, you are free to study. And that is the biggest gain. I mean, we are part of the biggest market of goods and ideas. So we are not yet completely integrated. So Croatia is not part of the Schengen area, which means that you still have a border. Okay? You still have a border. But we are going to join in 1.5 years, so we are going to be completely integrated. As far as the financial integration is concerned, I think it will take another 6 to 8 years for us to join Euro. Yeah. Other question?
Thank you for coming. I'm Aline Brown. I'm a non-traditional student here at the U. You mentioned that you were being sponsored by the LDS Church, and I'm wondering, with you joining the European Union and the last 13 years of struggle you've had, if you have seen an insurgence of religious freedom in your country. And you mentioned that the U.S. is one of your big allies, and that's one of our freedoms that we hold dear. So I was wondering if you could just touch on that, what kind of new freedoms you have explored.
Yeah. Well, well, of course that we have seen a surge of religious freedom, because in communist time religion was almost but forbidden. So, well, Croatia is predominantly a Catholic country. So the census shows that the numbers are very funny. So you have about 90% of population declaring themselves as Catholics. And then, well, 16% are atheists. So that means that probably about 12% of all Catholics do not believe in God. So a strange thing. and about 40% never go to church. So religious freedoms are complete. Well, there are no limits in. I think that there is a limit. You cannot count on the support from the state budget. Your church cannot count on support from state budget if the number of congregation members are lower than 500. So then, well, they do not consider that serious enough. But there are no limits at all, nor in practice, nor in legislation. So there is a surge, a slight surge in evangelical religions in Croatia, which is probably due to an excessive institutionalization of the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church that was very important in maintaining the national identity during the communism has become almost a state religion, which then makes some people of, I would say, deeper faith will look for other options or possibilities, but we have no problem with any religions. We have a growing Muslim population, mainly people coming from Bosnia and Herzegovina, but even the Muslims in a traditionally and historically Christian country, get a fair support from the state, and they are building their mosques and practicing their religion, and we are very proud for that.
Please join me in thanking Ambassador Paro for an excellent, informative forum.
Thank you.